How do we get from the inventor of total football to the manager that has won more trophies than any other in the history of football?
Hello and welcome to this week's Wikipedia Wanderers. I'm Josh, that is Dave, and we're going to have a little bit of a goat special embark on. You know, I do love the sound of a goat. There's many a video of goats making noises, and it just makes me laugh.
It is funny. Now, it is funny until you stay at your friend's house who has goats, and then they're just really irritating at like 4 in the morning. So
they're also not that nice to be around, eh? They just chomp on everything.
Yeah, and headbutt things.
Oh.
Although if you scare them, they do go stiff and fall over. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that. That's good. So, yeah. Good climbers as well, aren't they?
Good, yeah. A number of mountain goats. That's where they get the mountain goat name from.
Yeah, you see them, like, you pan out, it's like, wow, it's a goat. But that's not the goats we're talking about.
No,
were you aware of the abbreviation, acronym, initialism? One of those of goat.
Acronym. I'd probably, is it an acronym, I think? Yeah, the GOAT, the goat of all time. I think it came, my understanding is it came from like the basketball world.
I'm thinking American sport is the.
I think it came from basketball because people were being like, LeBron isn't the GOAT, it's Michael Jordan and things like that. And then it just sort of got ported over into the Ronaldo Messi argument. That's how I see it coming to football. Now, I don't have any proof of that. I can't write that in a Wikipedia page.
No.
But because it's weird, isn't it? Because like the GOAT in terms of football, you don't really hear Pelé or Maradona mentioned in that thing. But that was always the argument, who was better out of those?
Yeah. Maybe because the words come along later, but it's not getting retrospectively applied.
True. But Josh did mention before, it's going to be it's the first of, well, I don't know if you did mention it, but I'll mention it. It's going to be the first of a GOAT series. So
at the moment we've got manager and then the four key positions, but if we want to think of any other elements of GOAT, so goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, forward, and manager. But this week starts with manager. One choice for me, one choice for you. My choice might not be that well known because it wasn't known to me to the start. In preparation for this, I did some preparation.
Yep.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And was, you know, looking at lists of greatest managers, I was like, okay, I've heard of that one. And, you know, the Bob Paisleys, Bill Shankly's, the Sir Alex Ferguson's. And I was like, Rinus Michaels. Okay, not quite sure. And then as soon as you see he's Dutch, I'm like, okay, right, we've got something here. So born 1928 in Amsterdam, Rinus was a one club man for Ajax and played for the Netherlands international team. And he actually then went on to manage both of them with great success. So he won the European Cup with Ajax, won the league with Barcelona, and during four different stints with the national team, he won the Euros. It's kind of like trial and error. No, it didn't work this time, I'm out. I'll come back again in a bit. But why he's regarded as one of the greatest managers of all time is because of the invention of a football tactic or ideology known as total football. As I say, greatest manager of all time, 1999 was named coach of the century by FIFA.
Yeah.
The year that Sir Alex Ferguson won the treble. So, too soon, maybe. But, yeah. 2007, named the greatest post-war coach by the Times.
Huh? Okay.
2019, the greatest coach in the history of football by France Football. Okay, so there's some pedigree there. There's some accolades.
Yeah.
As a player, a bit of an inauspicious club career, really. As I mentioned, all with Ajax. It's actually the start that was delayed due to World War II. But he appeared over 200 times, scored over 100 goals as a striker. Internationally, even less successful than that, though. Because he appeared 5 times, scored 0, lost every match.
Impressive, yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't really get worse than that. Need some sending offs and some own goals. You could be maybe the cause of those losses. Because as a striker, you may be indirectly attributable to a loss. Maybe you missed a goal early on, which would have taken the pressure off or something like that. But yeah, not great.
It's just reminded me for some reason of you saying as a striker, you know, you don't really have an effect on a losing team. It's more defence or goalkeepers, or you maybe miss a chance. For some reason, that just reminded me of that highlight where Ian Dowie's defending a corner and bullet headers it into the top corner. Have you seen that? Like, for West Ham, I think it is. He's striker for West Ham, and he's back defending a corner, and he just attacks this corner like he's on the attacking side and heads it into the top postage stamp, and it's unstoppable. And then he just puts his head in his hands like, what have I done? Anyway, Ian Dowie was effective for that loss.
We're not saying that Mikkels did that for Netherlands.
Yeah, we're not saying that, yeah.
But his actually playing career was cut short due to injury. 7 years after his career was cut short, he managed a number of small clubs during that time, but 7 years after, he returned aged 37 as head coach of Ajax in 1965. Yeah, and this is, I find this hard to fathom. I'm trusting Wikipedia at this point. He joined them as a relegation candidate, it says.
Every team has their cycles, Josh. Every team has their cycles.
Don't you know it, United fan?
When was the last time you won a trophy?
2008, I think it was. But he had Johan Cruyff in the side. He had Neeskens in the side. And they won the league 4 times and the cup 3 times in the next 6 years. They would also go on to appear in 2 European Cup finals during that time, losing the first one to Milan in 69 and winning the second in 71, beating Panathinaikos 2-0 at Wembley. Having modernised Ajax with total football, which involved using the offside trap because it's quite a high pressing game, he left. And he left to Barcelona, taking Cruyff with him, and together they won the league in 1974. But again, medal around his neck, he left and went to manage the national team at the 74 World Cup. So he took them all the way to the final. So he joined quite, they'd already qualified, he joins them, and actually through to the final. At the point of the final, he'd managed them for 9 games and he was unbeaten. Unfortunately, they were gone to lose 2-1 to West Germany, and that was his first and last defeat because he stepped down. He went, nope, not having that.
I sort of feel like he could have an all or nothing series, because it is all or he wins, he retires, he does something else, he wins, he retires, he does something else, he loses, I retire, done.
Yeah, he doesn't really want to, he's like, I've taken it as far as I can take it, thank you very much, goodbye. He would then go on to manage in the US and Germany, but his finest out would come 14 years after that World Cup final loss. He'd guide Netherlands to a 2-0 victory over Soviet Union in Euro 88, a match most memorable for that Marco van Basten volley, the one with the ridiculous angle coming over, right foot, back across goal, lovely stuff. But as I said earlier, total football. So this is the biggest section of his page. Style of management, personality and legacy. So total football style of a player was actually inspired by an English manager, Jack Reynolds, who managed Ajax in the 40s. So his style at Ajax really hinged on Cruyff's ability. Centre forward, but was encouraged to roam freely around the pitch, somewhat akin to a kind of a false nine that we know now. However, total football took it to a next level, but his other teammates were also encouraged to roam around in similar, regularly switching positions, mainly on the flanks, so right wing forward, because it's 4-3-3, right wing forward, we come into right midfield, we come into right back, and it all interchanged. So, but all the while, they had to ensure that the tactical role was occupied somewhere on the pitch. So you need great communication, great spatial awareness, and that's what total football is about space, and it's also about utilising, creating space for yourself and oppressing the space of others. So again, it was very kind of exponent of high pressing game. So they used to win back the ball back really well. The offside trap, they would push up in a pitch, smother the team, and then create space by kind of their free roles. So, and at the time, total football was rising, and the Catenaccio style, the defensive man-marking and counter-attacking football used by Italian sides, was coming to its demise. So it came quite nicely, because when Mikkels left Ajax, Ajax went on to great success. They went to, I think they won 3 European trophies back-to-back after he left. But it was his style that was in play there. So it led to some great European matches between Italian sides and Ajax. So they beat Inter in the 72 Cup final. They defeated Milan in the following year's Super Cup by 6-1. It wasn't always successful, so some sides tried to kind of combat it. Like at the 74 World Cup, Bertie Vogts was used to man-mark Johan Cruyff. It worked, nullified them, they won, but out of that, the lack of the Italian style fading away, a new Italian style came out, the kind of zona mista, which mixed man-marking, zonal marking, and that would be used by another great manager, Giovanni Trapattoni.
Nice. Yeah.
So that's the total football. Rinus Michels was the exponent of it. won at international level, which I quite like as a manager. I like it when they do it on the international stage and the club stage. It's not often you see that. Often one is the exponent of one. Like we'll talk about Sir Alex Ferguson. Always rumour of him, you know, Scotland this. And didn't he have a small stint as Scotland manager?
He did have a small small stint, as Scotland manager.
I think it's a lot more difficult probably to win a tournament with Scotland. But I quite like it. I like flipping flapping between national because it shows they're two very different ways of management.
I agree. My only issue, or not issue, my point to raise would might be that he sounds more, as you've described it, as a coach.
Than
a manager. He's coaching a philosophy, a bit like Pep, right? That's what I think about Pep.
When you think of that's the kind of the now the modern day total football. It's you know, he plays players out of position. His full Pep's fullbacks tuck in to become midfielders.
Yeah,
it's very different. And so, and the high pressing and the creating space by kind of keeping the pitch big. That Pep is an exponent of that kind of early option because of, you know, Barcelona. I've said Johan Cruyff, they had Mikkels, they went on to follow a similar philosophy, Pep, obviously at Barcelona, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. And we've got a get from Rinus Michels to Sir Alex Ferguson, the greatest manager of all time, winning more trophies as a manager than any other manager in the history of managers. And I'm saying managers a lot because Josh commented before that I'd use managers, the word managers, too much. In the intro, so I had to get rid of one of my managers. So I'm now saying it a lot, but a little. I mean, loads of people know about Sir Alex Ferguson. Obviously, people listening to this podcast know about Sir Alex Ferguson. But I just wanted to give a quick breakdown on his sort of Wikipedia page, things that drew my attention, a little bit about his career and stuff like that. So he was actually a pretty good goal scoring striker back in the day as a Scottish youngster, let's say, 15 and 31 for Queen's Park, which was his first club, so 1-2, not bad. Left Queen's Park because he didn't get first team football, even though he was scoring 1-2, which is a bit of a surprise. Actually scored in a cup semi-final for them, but got dropped in the next game, which sort of like ended his spell there, put in a transfer request. Moved to St Johnstone, 19 and 37. After that, Dunfermline, 66 in 89, which is pretty good. Then got his big move to Rangers, 35 in 66. Again, fell out with pretty much all of these clubs owners at one point, whether it was playing time or contract disputes or something like that. And it tailed off a little bit towards the end of his career, where he played for Falkirk, 37 in 95, and ended at Ayr United, getting 10 in 28. So a pretty good goal scoring record in around Scotland. He started at the bottom of Scotland, got to arguably the top of Scotland playing for Rangers, and then dropped down a little bit playing for Falkirk and Ayr United. But it was at the stint at Falkirk he became a player coach, and he was very young when he did it. 29, I think he was, 29, 30, when he was at the last year of Falkirk. The new manager came into Falkirk and took the coaching bit out of his contract, and that meant Fergie would leave, went to Ayr United, became carried on as a player coach, and then stepped into management pretty much straight away after that Ayr United stint. Became the manager of St Mirren from 1978, where it's detailed as producing a remarkable transformation of a team in the lower half of the old second division of Scottish football, who pulled crowds of just over 1,000 people. He got them to first division champions in 1977, which is pretty impressive in 3 years. Nice. To go from towards the bottom of the second division to winning the first division. All the while he was playing attacking football, and the main key point was that the average age of the league winning team was 19. And his captain was 20. So that, you know, trust the youth thing that you saw in Man United at certain points was already there. St Mirren hold the record of being the only club to ever sack Sir Alex Ferguson throughout his career. There was alleged payments that Fergie was making as manager to players to help them sign or things like that. So again, not charging the club to sign players. It was all alleged. It went to a court case. I think it was ended quite mutually. And obviously, with hindsight, the St Mirren chairman of the time has come out and said it was a bit of a mistake to sack Sir Alex. Obviously. I think by this time,
hindsight
Sir Alex...
is 2020.
Yeah, and I think that by this time, Sir Alex had, you know, won the treble with Man United. So it's always good to say that. But he moved to Aberdeen. where his real success sort of started. But it wasn't easy to start with. He really struggled to get a lot of respect from the players because he was younger than a number of the players at Aberdeen when he moved there. But he very quickly got the nickname Furious Fergie in there. Obviously, it sort of adapted a little bit, didn't it? The hairdryer treatment is what we heard Fergie use, and then he became old Red Nose when he got angry and stuff like that. So, but what he did start was this sort of siege mentality approach with the media, which Jose Mourinho is probably the most famous person that we know about, an us v them situation. And he, every sort of press conference, every media appearance he did, he always said the media and the Scottish FA were praising and favouring the Glaswegian team, so Celtic and Rangers, over anyone else. But eventually, he actually won the league with Aberdeen. And in 1983 and 84, he won the league and the cup, so did a League Cup double in Scotland. Was offered the Rangers job, turned it down. Offered the Arsenal job, turned it down. Stayed with Aberdeen, won the league title again in 84-85. In 85-86, he won both domestic cups, but they finished fourth in the league. And he had been appointed at the end of that, or early, sorry, in 1986, as a club director. He was appointed to the club's board of directors, even though about in April, he told the owner, Dick Donald, that he intended to leave that summer. So I think the Aberdeen higher-ups were sort of doing, well, this will keep him on board and keep him around. He was approached by another First Division team in England, which was Wolverhampton Wanderers, turned them down because he was worried about their financial situation. They were like £2 million in debt. He didn't want to move to a club that he think might bankrupt and go out of business pretty soon. Interestingly, 84-85 season, it was reported he was considered for the Liverpool job, but that was given to Kenny Dalglish. Kenny Dalglish took it really quickly after the retirement of Joe Fagan. And Fergie actually stayed all through that summer of 1986 up until November, where he was appointed manager of Man United when Ron Atkinson got sacked. So
yeah, I was just thinking it was Ron Atkinson that was departed at that time. Yeah,
so he told Aberdeen he was going to leave. That was his mind was made up. It was just waiting for that right offer or, you know, the right contract or seeing what was going to happen. And so he joined Man United, which is obviously the biggest part of his Wikipedia page talking about Man United. And just a few things. So, you know, he had that run of seven games. They were drawn away to Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. Everyone said this was the game that was going to make or break his career at Man United. He was either going to get sacked if they lost. Forest were in the process of just about to win the League Cup. They were second in the league. They were this all really good conquering team. United won 1-0. Mark Robins' goal, which kept Fergie in a job, took them to the final. And it was that cup win that was cited as saving Fergie's job at Man United. Crystal Palace, we beat them 1-0. It was Mark Hughes, I think, that scored in the replay after a 3-3 thrilling draw in the first leg. But it was this sort of moment that you saw the brutality or the ruthlessness of Fergie. Literally went to a press conference, blamed his goalkeeper for all three goals, dropped him for the replay, bought in Les Seeley, won the next leg 1-0 with a clean sheet. It was like absolutely ruthless. But and then you get to the more modern era. So 1991, runners-up in the League Cup, lost to Sheffield Wednesday, but did win the European Cup Winners' Cup, beating Barcelona, which is where Brian Robson became the big Captain Marvel. It was like Brian Robson's one of his best performances in the club, beating Barcelona. Still to this day, United's only Cup Winners' Cup title. Never won it again. After that, obviously, it's a defunct tournament. Go and listen to...
And we know it.
Yeah, go and listen to episode 3 of season 3 for defunct tournaments. Which was really good. And then 1992, big hunt for a striker. Alan Shearer turned us down, went to Blackburn Rovers. David Hurst, Trevor Francis said he's not for sale. We put in like three offers. He stayed put, didn't get sold. Ended up paying £1 million for Dion Dublin, which was the only major signing that summer. Worked out all right, scored a few goals for the club. And then 92-93, Premier League starts. There's not too many ins and outs for Man United, but it gets to just... through the first couple of months of the season, and obviously Eric Cantona is signed. That's sort of the spark that ignites the team. He forms a well good partnership with Mark Hughes, and it's the first league title win of Man United, Ferguson's reigns of Man United. And from that point, they won the league title in 92 93 94 93 94 95 96 96 97 98 99 99 2000 2001 02 03 06 07 07 08 08 09 10 11 and 12 13, all under Fergie. But the pinnacle, obviously, the 1999 treble winning team that he put together, the mix of youth, the mix of experience, the unbelievable nature of never giving up, which was shown obviously in the final against Bayern Munich, coming back from one goal down in the first few minutes, 2-0, where in an interview live on TV he just said, "I can't believe it, football, bloody hell," is what he said in a live interview for TV. But I'm not going to go into his career because I think we all sort of know it. But Josh, a bit of the page that you are a huge fan of in Wikipedia, footballing controversies. Yeah, and he's got a number of them. Right, the first one, Gordon Strachan. The frosty relationship with Gordon Strachan, where he was at, it started in Scotland. Gordon Strachan played for Man United. Fergie came to Man United, sold him to Leeds, said he wasn't good enough. Leeds did really well and beat Man United to the title, which was the first division, in 91-92, with Gordon Strachan scoring a number of goals for Leeds United and pipping Man United, who finished second that year. David Beckham kicking the boot at the head. That old incident is a controversy. Yeah. He accused UEFA of fixing the Champions League draw. Got fined quite a hefty amount, even though, and the comment, the paragraph says, he wrote a letter of apology. I'd love to read that letter. So, but it didn't get him off the hook. They did fine him. The Rock of Gibraltar. No, you remember that with the horse racing?
Yes, I see. Yeah.
Which he threatened to leave the club, and then it was all sorted out behind doors. Something I'd forgotten about. The whole saga with the BBC?
No, his son, wasn't it?
Son was accused by the BBC with what was found out to be literally not much evidence at all of being an agent that took bungs. It was all disproven, and Fergie, for 9 years, didn't give an interview to the BBC. So assistant manager, Mike Phelan, always used to go and do the after things of Match of the Day and stuff like that. And then it took a sit-down with Man United lawyers, Man United chairman David Gill, Fergie, the head of the BBC, the head of the Northwest BBC, and the head of BBC Sport to come to a sort of agreement around that, you know, this is all in the past, we can put it behind us. And I think the BBC released a retraction of the documentary, is that the right word? Where you'd take something back to say it's not really true, yeah? And then another one involving his son, which is when Darren Ferguson was sacked by Preston, Fergie immediately said all loan players they had were going to be cancelled and come back to the club. And it's an interesting one because your initial reaction is, I'm going to do this out of spite because you've sacked my son.
Yeah, petty. Yeah.
Petty. What actually happened a month later is that Tony Pulis of Stoke also called back all of his loan players, although 3 out of 4 of them happen to be Man United ex-academy players. Preston got relegated.
You're not going to get away from it. This is petty. Petty behaviour by Ferguson.
Yeah. Preston got relegated. They were above relegation.
I remember seeing an interview with Roy Keane about this, and he's like talking about his relationship with Sir Alex and how Sir Alex always did things for the best interests of United, and the players, like, and he referenced this point. He's like, how is this in the best interest of the players? They were playing football, now they're not playing football. He didn't do it.
And then obviously there's too many honours to list. If you look at his page and go down to honours, it's absolutely ridiculous, so I'm not going to list them. But in a nutshell, that's Man United. Like, famous things, obviously, the treble 99 hairdryer treatment. He got that reputation as a disciplinarian as soon as he went into management. He had a bit of a rough upbringing in Scotland in the shipyards, and work was being taken away and places were closing down.
It's Scotland in the 40s and 50s. I'm expecting tranquility.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And then just a superb career as management, and has won more trophies than any other manager in the history of football, and therefore my GOAT manager.
I can't disagree with it. He is the GOAT manager. Not coaching or tactics, it is that man management, that kind of even the media presence, the siege mentality. He motivates players. Tactics weren't anything special at all. They got found out tactically in a number of, like, we talk about European trophies. It definitely got found out in one of the European finals against Barcelona, went to Preston, got absolutely, went to play and got absolutely outclassed, but in the league, and you know, just did fantastically well and bought players well. Obviously, the financial muscle of United bought players well. And what was surprising for me was I'm looking at his teams managed, and just I hadn't really ever looked at it in terms of how long he'd managed before United. So 12 years managing before United.
Yeah.
Similar to a manager who's just moved, Graham Potter. Graham Potter's managed, I think, for 14 years.
Wow.
Before this point.
Okay.
Similar ages as well. So Fergie would have been 45 at the point of... So quite young, in managerial terms, quite young.
Yeah.
45-year-old manager.
Yeah.
Ten Hag is older now, I'm pretty sure.
He is, yeah.
And Graham Potter, I think, is a little bit older, kind of 48. But obviously, Fergie has achieved a lot more in his career already than Potter had done. It's just more of an age reference and career span reference. I'm trying to kind of understand when he was appointed. But... yeah, no doubt about it. Fantastic manager. Could never wait when I was younger for him to leave United because he was the glue holding them together. Look at the sides that they had near the end. It was Fergie driving forward because those players were not good enough to win in their own right, and it's been proven.
So it's really interesting. There is a stat in the Wikipedia page that I didn't pull out in the summary, but can you remember the first time he announced he was going to retire?
Oh, he's done it a few times, didn't he? Yeah. So
he did it.
Capello was mentioned as a replacement, I think.
Yeah, so technically he's done it officially. He officially said he was going to retire once and then came back, and that was the one. That's the one I'm sort of thinking about. When he announced his retirement halfway through the season, the team then went and lost 9 out of 13 games, and then when he reversed his retirement, they won every game to the end of the season. When he said, no, I'm saying I'm going to sign a new contract, they won every game to the end of the season. And you're right, he's the distinct... glue that makes the sum of the parts better than the individuals that are there. And it was just, yeah, unbelievable. And it sort of shows what he's done, and yeah, absolutely ridiculous. And you touched on it before, the little stint at Scotland. It was actually not forced upon him because he accepted the opportunity, but the coach that got Scotland into the World Cup, qualified for the World Cup, died of a heart attack, and they basically got all the best Scottish managers at the time and went, we want to make a pool of you that are going to manage the team. And it was sort of agreed between them that Fergie would be like the manager and then he'd have three assistants of the others. So yeah, obviously they didn't get out of the group stage, and then he retired straight away to focus on club management. But yeah, I don't really class that as part of his actual management. It's not a job he applied for and got. But you saying tactically, again, he wasn't the most tactical, astute person. He relied heavily on his assistant managers. Archie Knox followed him from St Mirren to Aberdeen, did really well with him at Aberdeen. He had a panel of people helping pick his assistant at Man United, which was Steve McLaren when Archie Knox retired. Steve McLaren did really well. When Steve McLaren left, we struggled for a bit. Carlos Cruzeiros came in for a season, did really well. He left, came back, did really well. I think he knew his...
Rennie Mühlenstein,
I've only recently found out, came from as an under-18 coach at Man United, all the way up to assistant manager. Nice. Like, went all that way. Brian Kidd, obviously, as well, was huge in the first bit of success in the Premier League. So
yes, I've memories of him jumping onto the pitch in celebration.
It's referenced. Yeah. That's the turning point of the season to win the league, yeah, against Sheffield Wednesday. So,
okay.
Yeah, so but there we go.
We need to get to him.
Yes.
You're thinking, you know, anything, obviously, it's not going to be, I don't think it's the most difficult place to end at. He's got lots of trophies, lots of matches we can go to, cup finals. It'd be nice to be able to go for a cup final. Maybe we can go to a Cup Winners' Cup final. That'd be quite nice. The 82-83 one. I don't know anything about that. But in reality, we're probably going to find it from United somewhere, some way, shape or form.
Probably, yeah.
Where do we want to go from Rinus Michels?
It's a good point, actually, because I'm not too sure. I think, you know, we're always a little bit conscious of time. But I think today's episode is one that we've had such a long intro talking about managers that are incredible, that it might be a slightly longer episode. So I don't really mind. I mean, we need to jump forward in time.
Yeah.
Slightly.
So my suggestion of Jack Reynolds, the manager of Ajax in the 40s and 50s, isn't great.
Do you know what? When you said the intro that there was an English manager that was inspired him, I thought that's where we're going. So I really don't mind if you want to go to Jack Reynolds.
Because there might be things like he's inspired so-and-so managers. And we can click on it. It's quite nice to keep to managers, I suppose.
I was thinking it's nice to keep to managers. So Should we go Jack Reynolds?
Jack Reynolds is
there. Where, can you, yeah. Because I wasn't
he's
on
in
page.
Style of management, personality and legacies in the first line.
Oh, yes, I've got him. Okay.
Ooh, okay. full name, John Reynolds.
Awesome.
On the top right. That. Okay, okay, right. That's right, it seems. So, born in 1881, the year before Tottenham were formed. That's quite impressive. And passed away in Amsterdam, age 81 in 1962. So, played for Man City, Burton, Grimsby, Sheffield Wednesday, Watford, New Brompton and Rochdale. But then managed only... St. Gallen is Switzerland?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not Holland, it's Switzerland. Yeah. I think it's Switzerland.
Switzerland in 1912 to 1914. So, just before World War One and just after the Titanic crashed. Just to give you some reference points there. Ajax for 10 years, 1525. Then Netherlands for a year. MVV, again, that's Dutch. Blauw-Wit.
Sounds Dutch.
Yeah, it sounds Dutch. Then AFC, feels like it's missing something there, but AFC for 1 year, 27-28. And then, oh, he had a bit of a hiatus, it seems. So 1928 to 1940, managed Ajax.
World War Two,
innit? The war was probably a hiatus there. And 1945 to 47, Ajax again. So he won the league with Ajax 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Won the cup once. Was a league manager, wasn't he?
Hmm. And you've said his whole page.
Yeah, and he's got an older brother, Billy, who was a footballer. So that seems like where we're going to go.
No.
Other than that, we've got one of the pioneers of a total football system, considered by among the best managers the team had, also influencing Rinus Michels. Okay, we have Netherlands Football League Championship, which, I don't know, feels like that was a precursor to the Eredivisie, or...
It must be, yeah, it must be.
We have Ajax to go to, we have all those teams I mentioned, City, Burton, Grimsby, Sheffield Wednesday, Watford, New Brompton. Don't know what side
New Brompton sounds American.
Sounds like it's interesting.
It does. I'm also thinking St. Gallen, Swiss. We don't know too much about Swiss football. Maybe some European pedigree. Maybe a Cup Winners' Cup appearance. I doubt it.
I'm all over New Brompton, mate.
You're calling New Brompton?
New Brompton.
Okay.
Sounds interesting. Doesn't say where it is. New Brompton.
Takes me to Gillingham Football Club.
Is this right? Yes. Founded 1893, 129 years ago, as... New Brompton.
Wow. So this is a big thing, because Josh and I's the closest big-ish club to us growing up was Gillingham. So
yeah,
this is impressive that we've done this.
I've got already thinking here. Didn't Steve Bruce play for Gillingham?
Ooh.
Thinking of former players, I think Steve Bruce has definitely got something to do with Gillingham.
Oh, okay. I'm not 100% sure, but okay.
So amazingly, the chairman is still Paul Scally, who. We're talking of play. I don't know. I might be doing something, an injustice here, but I think of. We've mentioned corruption in terms of Darren, a little bit of Sir Alex, but unfounded. I have the same feel around Paul Scally.
Yeah, okay.
How it feels.
Yeah.
Because he's always in the news, he seemed to be. Local news as well. Neil Harris is manager. Wasn't Neil Harris a.
Millwall striker?
Millwall.
Yeah. That's where I remember him.
Five players past and present.
Oh. Neil Harris. No, he's manager. And it was Millwall. Gillingham players.
Simeon Jackson.
The guy that went. Andy Hessenthaler.
Yeah, he's done some player managing as well.
Yeah.
For sure.
For Gillingham. I'm pretty sure for Gillingham he did it.
Yeah.
And yes, and Tyler. I'm trying to think back to is when they lost to Man City on penalties. We would have been in sixth form. And they lost on penalties to Man City. And Man City went up to the Premier League.
Oh my goodness. Why can't I not think of anyone?
No, it's tough, isn't it? Because they're terrible, Josh. That's why.
Why? How do I pull Simeon Jackson out of the bag?
Canadian.
Steve Bruce.
He's calling Simeon Steve Jackson. Bruce. He's calling Steve. We've got three. I'm going to go with Andy Hessenthaler's son, whose first name I don't know, who is definitely a professional footballer, so I reckon would have played for Gillingham.
Okay, I'm going to go down to current squad. Do you ever look at about club crest colours and things like that? Well, I'm looking at crest. It's got the Invicta, which is about Kent. So
it's got the Kent Invicta thing. Nickname is the Jills, just in case anyone doesn't know about that. Let's have a look. There isn't... Oh, colours and crest, yeah. So although Gillingham have long been associated with the colours blue and white, the original New Brompton side wore a strip consisting of black and white stripes. hence why there's the black and white stripes on the badge, Josh. In 1913, the black and white stripe was dropped in favour of red shirts with blue sleeves emblazoned with a borough's coat of arms. However, the striped shirts returned after World War I and were finally replaced with the now familiar combination of plain blue shirts and white shorts. The club's current crest is a shield divided vertically into halves of blacks and white stripes and solid blue, reflecting the club's original and modern kits. On the blue half is the country emblem of Kent, which is the horse, a white horse, rampant, albeit slightly altered from its normal form, as its mane is stylized into the letters of the words Jills. I don't see that. Its mane.
I can kind of see that. The top one is a G, and it works its way around the crest. Yeah,
it does in the club crest. It doesn't on the photo of the horse next to that section that says colours and crest. But yeah, interesting. The first sponsored name to appear on Gilliam's shirts was the Italian home appliance manufacturer Zanussi throughout the 1980s. Nice. Subsequent sponsors have included Chatham Maritime, Medway Toyota, Cannon Tool Hire, Invicta FM, which will be news to Josh and I listening to that, imagine, at some point. They were sponsored by Cool with a K. Don't recognise that. Medway News, C France, the Kent Reliance Building Society. So very local sponsorship. Yeah. So go on then, Josh. So hit me with
current players, nothing, but they have a player of the season all the way back to 1968 to current date, and we have Steve Bruce wins it twice in the 80s. We have Tony Cascarino wins it. Gavin Peacock. We have Andy Hessenthaler again wins it a couple of times. Nyron Nosworthy.
Defender.
Yeah. Yeah, right back, I think. We have Andy Bartram. I think he might have been a Spurs youth player, which is maybe why I remember him. We have Bradley Dack, who's gone on to play for Blackburn. Isn't John Egan Sheffield United?
John Egan, Sheffield United, yeah.
Yeah. Connor Ogilvie, again, was a Spurs youth player. So there's a few players there.
I really recognise the name Barry Fuller. But was that a teacher at our school?
That was Mr. Fuller, the DT teacher.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it would be very unlikely that he's won the player of the season in 2018-19.
Highly
unlikely. Because he was about 50 when we were at school 25 years. So manager is Neil Harris, we've touched upon. Nicky Shorey, head of recruitment, former left-back for Reading.
Yeah.
I'm right. Managers, it doesn't really have a list as a separate clickable link, but we have Peter Taylor, I remember, was manager. He's mentioned there. Other than that, no, nothing really going on in terms of that previous chairman. Paul Scully's been chairman since 1995.
Yeah.
What honours have they got then? We've got the best honours. Oh my goodness. They've only ever won, been champions of the fourth tier. So League Two. And that was back in 2012-13. That was their best achievement, is what I'm getting from that, yeah?
Hang on. Yes, winners as champions. Yes, sorry, I saw playoff
they've
winners.
They've won the playoff in League One, but not outright winners. They were champions of the Southern Football League back in the 40s. There was, their Kent success, loads of stuff in the 40s there. So you can look at their performance. Yeah, it was definitely kind of they're in second tier in the 90s. Rivalries, it's going to be London-based, you'd have thought. Millwall considered to be the closest. Jills have the local rival Swindon Town.
Yes, Swindon.
It's seen by many as the club's biggest rival, stemming from bad-tempered matches between the two teams in the past. While Swindon fans generally do not consider Gillingham among their biggest rivals, there was violence when they met at Priestfield, Gillingham Stadium, in the 05-06 season, their first meeting since a promotion playoff in 1987. Maidstone United were previously Kent's second league side, so a bit of a rivalry. Popular culture, what have we got here? In 2005, film Green Street makes use of action sequences filmed during a match between Gillingham and West Ham. Although, for unknown reasons, the dialogue states that the team playing West Ham is Birmingham City. Oh, that's a bit
Have you
harsh.
Seen Green Street?
Yeah, it's really weird. Lots of hate for journos.
Oh, okay. Never seen it. It doesn't appeal to me at all.
Elijah Wood's playing the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
thug.
No, really? It's not my bag.
No.
I didn't realise it was there. A lot of hate for journos. Is that what?
I don't know. I've got a quick comment on the rivalry thing. I don't think you can have a rivalry with Swindon if you haven't played them. The first time you play them is 2005-06. Since 1987, that's not a rivalry that survives time. I'm sorry.
Well, especially it was only because of bad tempered matches. Yeah. It's like you're locally, you know, chatting about Swindon and stuff like that. It's, well, who are you, Swindon or Gillingham? What do you mean? That's not.
Yeah.
Carla Saba is mentioned. Do you remember that? The highest fee paid by Gillingham is $600,000 for Carla Saba.
Yeah, I remember the name.
Highest transfer received was for Robert Taylor, paid by Man City, 99. Don't remember Robert Taylor.
No. Don't remember him at all.
Okay, so where do we want to go, the route of Bruce?
I mean, you
do
called Steve to... Bruce. You called it yeah. early. You called it early doors. I'm happy to do that. Tony Pulis, I don't remember being Gillingham manager. He was.
Seems logical. We've been to Tony Pulis, so we've at least been to his son. We've been to him, haven't we?
We have been to him, yeah. We have been to him. It was just a passing comment. I don't think we had mentioned it.
Do we want any honours we want to click on? Few and far between. Don't think they're going to help us and get us to present day at all.
No, I think I'm happy to go Steve Bruce. You did call it early, so.
No other player in the player of the season you think I wouldn't mind knowing about him? Andy Hessenthaler, we mentioned. I feel like we could be doing some Kent justice and teaching people about the world of Andy Hessenthaler.
I mean, I also want to see if I'm right that his son played football for Gillingham.
Let's play Andy Hessenthaler game then.
Okay, Andy Hessenthaler. English football manager, former player, who's currently the manager of Dover Athletic. It's getting closer to home, Josh. It's getting closer and closer to home.
5 miles away.
Yeah. Began his career in non-league football, didn't turn professional until he joined Watford at the age of 26. A late bloomer in terms of professional football. Short spell at Barnet, joined Dover in 2007, 2 seasons in charge. He led the club to successive championships of the Isthmian League Division 1 South and the Isthmian League Premier Division. But after 3 years at Dover, became manager at Gillingham for the second time, sacked from there. Returned to the club as assistant manager in 2014 before taking a similar role at Leyton Orient. In 2016, he was appointed manager of the club at Leyton Orient, sacked later that year, and in November, appointed manager of Eastleigh, but left them to return to Dover, where he's currently manager. And his footballing career, question mark, until 1983, so we're going to say out of the womb, straight out of the womb and put on his boots to play for Corinthian. Had 1 season at Charlton Athletic, but didn't play, back to Corinthians, then made for Dartford, Redbridge Forest, this is all amateur, got his professional contract at Watford, 195 appearances, 11 goals, moved to Gillingham, 303 appearances, 20 goals, had a loan spell at Hull, 10 appearances, 0 goals, Barnet, 40 appearances, 2 goals, Dover Athletic, 36 appearances, 4 goals, and I'm going to say Gillingham, Barnet, Dover all involve some sort of player-manager role.
Well, it says down below, first two managing real roles, Gillingham first of all, and Dover involved player manager. Barnet isn't actually mentioned on his top right summary, but it's not even mentioned his managerial statistics.
Ah, so he obviously wasn't a player manager at Barnet.
No.
So, okay.
No. A very kind of tidy central midfielder is how I've got a vague memory of him playing.
I remember him not being very good. For like the level we watch football at.
Probably good at that level.
Yeah. Just to
Widely regarded as a club legend by Gillingham fans, who in 2005 voted him the team's best ever player in a local radio poll.
Yeah. I know he is highly regarded by Gillingham fans. I've just got down to personal life. He has a son, Jake, who is a professional footballer and made his debut for Gillingham in December 2013. Bang. Got it. Called it.
Is that where we're going next?
I God hope not. It's nowhere near to Fergie, is it?
No, it's an ever-decreasing level of information, I think. So, okay, so we've got lots of different things on here. He was, he signed for a fair bit of money, signed by Gillingham for $235,000, a club record fee at the time. We've got Wembley's mentioned. We've got player coaches mentioned. Masters football event. Nice. Ooh. He was player of a tournament in 2006 when playing for Watford. John Gorman. I remember John Gorman was assistant to Glenn Hoddle.
Okay. I'm thinking, Josh, we could go a little bit sort of rogue, but, a bit more. It's not as rogue as Jake Hessenthaler. We could go and look at the 2000 Football League Second Division playoffs. It was at Wembley. I think that was the one where they lost to Man City.
Yeah.
Or it's an honour, which means they won it, right? Yeah. It's an honour, so they won it. So the 2000. The link to 2000, I think.
As a player honours.
Yeah, I think will take us to the game, yeah? It will take us to...
Should do.
It should do. All right.
Yes, the 2000 Football League Second Division playoff final. It's not the game Dave's thinking of. It's 3 goals to Gillingham, 2 to Wigan Athletic.
It's the year after the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
So, both teams' managers left their respective jobs after the match. Wigan's John Benson had always intended to step down, and Gillingham hoped to retain the services of Peter Taylor, but he chose to leave and take the manager's job at Leicester City. Gillingham spent 5 years at the high level before being relegated back to the third tier. After losing the playoffs again in 2001, Wigan gained their promotion to the first division in 2003. Okay, so it was in the second division where Preston finished top, Burnley finished second, Gillingham third, Wigan fourth. And Millwall and Stoke finish with top six. Let's have a look at the sides, because that's where it gets interesting.
Yeah, I'll take Wigan.
Oh, I remember some more. Oh, there's definitely some more Gillingham players I recognise here.
Okay. I don't recognise too many of the Gillingham. I've got a couple in there that I recognise, but Wigan, I know quite a few, I think. So Derek Stilley was in goal. Both teams, weirdly, played five at the back. So
yeah.
Scott Green was right wing back. Pat McGibbon, Stuart Bowmer, and Arjun Dezeu at centre back. Yeah, Kevin Sharp was the left wing back who got sent off on the 86th minute. Ooh, drama. Ian Kilford, Neil Redfern, and Darren Sheridan. I recognise Redfern and Sheridan were two of the three centre midfielders, with Ian Kilford making up the other one. And Simon Hayworth. And Andy Little was the strike partnership. Andy Little is a name I definitely recognise.
Check out the substitute goalkeeper. Okay?
Substitute goalkeeper is where I was going to get to. Roy Carroll is on the bench.
Ooh.
Best save ever. I mean, the only goalkeeper to save a ball that crossed the line by about 2 yards. Carl Bradshaw, Stuart Barlow, Gareth Griffiths, and Jeff Perron. I recognise none of those players other than Roy Carroll, and the manager was John Benson, as Josh touched on earlier. So take us through Gillingham.
Vince Bartram. Remember that goalkeeper? Yep. Vince Bartram. Nicky Southall as well. Club legend, that is. He's got to make a lot of appearances. Adrian Pennock, Barry Ashby, Guy Butters, and Roland Edge at left wing back.
Roland Hessenthal. Edge. Do you recognise the name Roland Edge? Folks in the Victor.
Yeah. Hessenthaler, Jeannie Lewis, and Ty Gooden in midfield, with Carla Saba and Ify Anura up front. Definitely remember him. Paul Smith, Nyron Nosworthy, Steve Butler, Andy Thompson, and Steve Maltone as a substitute goalkeeper. Peter Taylor managed them. Okay, so we've got an out here. This is kind of what you hope for anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Going to a match, you've got 22 players, and well, more than 32 mentioned. You got all different bits in there. So we're going to Roland Edge is where you want to go, yeah?
I mean, I was going to say that. I'd be very tempted to go there, but it's not. We've got to go Roy Carroll, haven't we, I think, after this, so...
Honestly, I think every page so far has mentioned Tony Pulis. It's the third page in a row where Tony Pulis is mentioned.
There you go.
Former Gillingham manager Tony Pulis, working as a pundit on the Sky Sports 2 broadcast, picked out Liddell as a key player and said that his teammates needed to get the ball to him more frequently in the second half. Thanks, Tony.
I mean, to be fair to the game, it looks very entertaining. 3-2 with a red card going to extra time. You're getting your money's worth as a fan.
The 10 men of Wigan actually take the lead in extra time.
Yeah.
And then Butler and Thompson score 2 goals in the second half of extra time in 4 minutes to win it.
Yeah. 53, nearly 54,000 people. That's awesome. I love English football, how crowds are drawn to games. It's awesome.
Yeah. The penultimate game to be played at the original Wembley.
Okay. Nice.
Peter Taylor describes it as one of the best memories of his career and paid tribute to the team spirit of the Gillingham players. We had some real top blokes, real good spirits. Your AD Pennix, your Barry Ashby's, they're all different class, really good attitudes. Players like Hesse, amazing characters. Even though we'd be losing, you would never have written those players off, never. Is that a good impression?
I think that was a decent impression. It's just a shame that he wouldn't write any of those players off and then left them after getting promoted to go and join Leicester. So, yeah.
You're good enough without me, guys.
Yeah, you've got the fight. You're good enough without me.
Right.
So.
Before we click on him, Roy Carroll's final club. I'm going to guess he's not playing anymore.
Oh no, he won't be playing now. Surely not.
Final club, Roy Carroll. What's your guess? I guess it's West Ham.
I think he had an odd spell somewhere in Greece.
Oh, do you know what? I'm now thinking of Scandinavia. Let's find out.
I'm going to go Panathinaikos.
No. He's playing up until last year. Roy Eric Carroll, born 30 September 1977, Northern Irish professional footballer who plays as a goalkeeper, best known for spells at Wigan, Manchester United, where he won a Premier League Winners' Medal and the 2004 FA Cup, and Olympiakos,
yeah,
where he won the Greek Super League and the Greek Cup twice. Represented Northern Ireland 4-5 times at international level, gaining his first cap aged 19 in 97. Carroll has also had a one-game managerial career, leading Barnet to a 2-1 victory in the 2011 Hearts Senior Cup final against Stevenage. Therefore, Carroll holds the unusual honour of having won a trophy in his only game as a manager.
Well done.
Oh, in a managerial Carroll special. Why was this guy not in as a GOAT manager? That's a great record.
I'm just trying to think very quickly. Other than accidentally landing on Gillingham, weirdly, all of our clicks have been managers because Roy Carroll is a manager.
Yes.
I love that.
We had Jack Reynolds, Gillingham, Andy Hessenthaler. Roy, we've done this as, keeping it managerial. So playing career started at Hull in 1995, then Wigan, where he made the majority of his appearances, the highest he'd made for any club, 138. We have Man United for 4 years. Straight after that, West Ham, I remembered. Went to Rangers and did not appear. Went to Derby. Was that Derby's shocking season? Was that Derby's really the worst season ever?
As in lowest Premier League total ever.
Yeah, 08-09.
Yeah, could be.
Odense, so yeah, that was where the Scandinavia bit came from. You remembered time out in Greece and Cyprus. We have Crete, Olympiakos. But he comes back after that. Notts County, Linfield, FC Mindwell, and Dungannon Swifts back in 2001, which sounds like he's gone back to Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
If I'm going to guess at anything. After a brief period playing for Mid-Ulster Football Club junior side, FC Mindwell, Carroll returned to the Irish League side for Dungannon Swifts in January 2021. Okay. So, never scored in his career, unfortunately. It's always nice if a goalkeeper's had a goal.
Yeah.
I remember him, obviously, for his fumble of Pedro Mendes' long-range halfway effort.
I think everyone remembers Roy Carroll.
Can you remember anything else he did for United?
He was a good backup goalkeeper. He was a good quality backup goalkeeper to have, but it's hard to remember anything else he did other than save a shot that had crossed the line by 2 yards. So yeah.
He was named Danish Goalkeeper of the Year in 2009, which is lovely. Northern Ireland International Personality of the Year 2013. Why? It's not even sports personality.
No, that's odd. In November, what year was it that he won that?
2013.
Oh, okay. No, because in his personal life bit, he has got a section that says in November 2001, Carroll received a Red Cross Humanitarian Award for his kindness to children with leukemia. So he might be very charitable in the background and you just don't hear it. So,
well,
yeah.
Possibly. So I think the best route in here would be honours, and we've either got the Community Shield or the FA Cup, because they're going to click matches, we'll see the team layout, and at the bottom it'll say Sir Alex Ferguson.
It will, you're correct. Do we want to... I mean, we did, again, in the trophies episode, I asked you to rank your trophies and list of how much do you care about them. I think I used a better phrase than that, but you put the Community
what's
Shield...
what's a major and what's a minor trophy, yeah?
You put the Community Shield right at the bottom. Do you want to go and look at a Community Shield final?
No, I don't care. I don't... The only reason I click on it is because I'm not using somewhere I'd normally go, but we need to go somewhere. And
who do we think is the games? 03-04 FA Cup, I think, is Man United Arsenal. Oh no, that might be Man United Millwall.
I cannot remember things like this. I cannot remember years. I don't even know who'd be playing 03-04. Who's there? I honestly don't know anything. I can't pinpoint time like that.
All right. Oh, I said Millwall. I meant Wigan. Who did we smash in the final? It was ridiculous. Was
there
it?
Was
Wigan?
A Millwall game. There was a.
Was that in the final, the Millwall game?
Yeah, at Millennium Stadium, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to go for... Yeah, let's go to the 03-04 FA Cup final, and I think it was Millwall. And it would be Ronaldo, Roy Carroll, obviously. It would be Gary Neville. Rio may have signed by then. Giggs. Are you already there?
I'm there, I'm looking at it, yeah.
Am I listing good names at the moment?
Gary Neville's there. Cristiano Ronaldo's there.
Giggs
is there, yeah.
Van Nistelrooy.
Van Nistelrooy's up top.
Skulls in behind him.
Who's in goal?
Who is
in goal? At this point, Sir Alex Ferguson takes the piss.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah, he makes three piss-taking substitutes in the 84th minute.
So he brings on Roy Carroll.
Come to the page, Dave. Come to the page.
Okay, I'll come to the page. I'm done guessing.
So it was a 3-0 victory for Manchester United against Millwall. Ronaldo scoring one and Van Nistelrooy scoring two. So where Millwall were at the time, playing in lower league, where were they? We were 10th in the first division. So known as the Championship now. It was the 11th FA Cup victory for Manchester United. The Man United players wore shirts bearing the name and number of midfielder Jimmy Davis, who died in a road incident in August 2003.
Yep.
Jeff Winter was the referee. So your route to the final for United. Oh, okay. So you beat Villa, you beat Northampton Town, you beat Manchester City. Was this pre-Money City?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Beat Fulham, beat Arsenal. Was that that was after Ryan Giggs's.
Yeah, this is this. I don't think this is the Ryan Giggs.
Because that was at Villa Park, wasn't it?
So, oh, maybe. No, it can't be. It's got to be before that.
Yeah, this isn't flying winger Giggs in 2003, is
no.
it? No. Okay, and Millwall would, Walsall, Telford, Burnley, Tranmere, and Sunderland. So they had a lovely route to the final. It was going to become unstuck, wasn't it?
Yeah. But
so
I mean,
when I said the piss take, but strikes Bergson had. In the 84th minute, he made three subs. He took off Darren Fletcher, brought on Nicky Butt. That's fine. Took off Cristiano Ronaldo, brought on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Okay. Took off Tim Howard, the goalkeeper, and brought on Roy Carroll. That is taking the mick.
Yeah, but I love it. It's good, isn't it?
The amount of stick that Richarlison get the other day for doing keepy-ups in the...
Yeah, but...
That is the managerial equivalent. He's subbing a goalkeeper in a cup final. Have some respect, man.
Football Manager... You're 3-0 up with 5 minutes to go, and you know that your sub goalkeeper hasn't really made an appearance all season. You'd bring him on,
right?
I'd
do it.
Yeah,
I'm doing it. I'm not saying yeah, but I'm taking a piss at that point.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Of course you are. Yeah. Player manager Dennis Wise for Millwall.
Yes, he was. Yeah. And brought himself off in the 89th minute. The only player in Mill. I really would have thought Mill would have got stuck in more. One yellow card, unless the referee was being very lenient.
Yeah.
Tim Cahill lining up. Neil Harris. Oh, what a lovely move we've done here. Gillingham manager Neil Harris lining up in this final. Could have clicked on him then.
Yeah, true. Paul Eiffel. Andy Marshall in goal. There's a few names that I'd recognise in there. It's... I mean, they were terrible footballers compared to Man United, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and yeah, so John O'Shea. I mean, you say you're terrible footballers. You had Wes Brown, John O'Shea lining up for you. So
Wes Brown was a good defender, mate.
Jemba came was on the bench, not and Phil Neville.
Yeah.
This is what I mean. This United side spattering of absolute dross. Like you look at like squads now, you go how City get of a squad which you like great players in every position. You look at this and going, you have got some passengers in this side, haven't you?
The only passenger there, really, for that era, is Jemba, maybe Phil Neville. Mikel Silvestre was a very good defender at the time. John O'Shea was a good defender. Wes Brown was a very good defender.
But would you not even say that Tim Howard wasn't up to scratch?
Oh, no, it's the year we sold Fabian Barthez. Yeah, we sold Barthez and made Tim Howard our number one. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like... That transfer confused me a little bit, actually.
What, Barthez?
No, Tim Howard.
Oh, Tim Howard. He was
signed
clearly...
Signed from MLS.
Signed from the Colorado Rapids, I think. He was clearly a good keeper. He played in the Premier League for years after that.
Is United wanting to be the best team in the world. It's not... I always think that these aren't the best players in the world. Which we spoke about earlier, which isn't what United were trying to achieve. True.
And I think, again, it sort of leads back into the ruthlessness of Sir Alex, right? Because wasn't it after Tim Howard we signed Van der Sar? Because he was like, that's clearly a deficiency that we need to...
Well, because of Tim Howard's flap against Porto.
Probably,
and Mourinho ran down the line because he palmed it out, didn't he? And
Is for an offside goal, so we shouldn't have lost the game. And Paul Scholes had a very normal goal ruled out for absolutely nothing. Mm. Yeah.
Do you know what I don't remember very clearly? Ronaldo playing with Van Nistelrooy. Was it just one season?
Two seasons. So this season and the next season, and then we sold him and bought in Luis Saha. So, yeah. And then they linked up together at Madrid. Ronaldo and Van Nistelrooy. Again?
No. No, Van Nistelrooy would have been there then.
How many years was he in Madrid, Van Nistelrooy?
Not many,
was it?
Only a couple, yeah.
No, that's true, yeah. Okay, maybe they didn't link up.
Ronaldo's time was longer initially at United, I think, because he obviously also played with, obviously, Rooney and Berbatov was there. So it's just, yeah, confuses me. That's why I said I'm not good with those time spans and when people played. But we're on a page, and it's at the time, it was Alex Ferguson, not Sir Alex Ferguson. But he is their Leicester's manager against his opposition that day was Dennis Wise.
I've found an image of Ronaldo and Van Nistelrooy at Real Madrid together, training.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Van Nistelrooy was actually man of the match that day because of his two goals.
Good.
He kept it tight, actually, in the 44th minute until a breakthrough.
Yeah, but I remember the game being so one-sided, it was ridiculous.
Wasn't there a bad foul by Scholes or Wise? I've got an image of a real stamp in midfield.
I mean, you've listed the two players that would probably give away a bad foul in midfield.
Yeah. I mean, Roy Keane's there, so...
Yeah, true. No. All right, then.
Let's click through. Alex Ferguson. Sir Alexander Chapman Ferguson. CBE as well. There we go. So, in this managerial GOAT special, we started with Arinas Michels of Total Football Ajax, Barcelona and Netherlands fame. One of the early adopters of Total Football, which inspired him, was Jack Reynolds. Jack Reynolds had a playing career. He played for New Brompton. Like, who is this glamorous side? Is it early in the US? We should have realised it was in 1908, so it was never really going to be in the US. That was actually the first name of Gillingham FC, a team from Kent, where both Dave and I grew up. Gillingham's former Player of the Year in 96, 97, and 99, 2000 was Andy Hessenthaler. Also went on to manage them, so another manager. He won the Football League Second Division playoffs in 2000. So we got to that final. And in that final, we see lining up against Gillingham on the substitute bench, again, Roy Carroll. Roy Carroll obviously had a time at United. But his time at United, he won the 2003-04 FA Cup, where he was, again, substitute goalkeeper. But did get 6 minutes of the match, being subbed on in the 84th minute. And manager at that time, the bookend of this managerial goats, maybe the greatest manager of all time, Sir Alex Ferguson. Great stuff. No actions taken. Lovely. Oh, very clean. That was a very clean episode.
Yeah, it was very clean. And we've learned that Roy Carroll may have to be considered as a goat contender for managers.
Yes, because he has won.
One game, one trophy.
One game, one trophy. Also likes to appear on a bench in cup finals.
Does. Yeah, it does. Player manager, would you put yourself on the bench if you're in the cup final? Or no matter if you haven't played during the season, you're just going to start yourself?
No. If I'm integral on playing, but I'll be very fair as a player manager, yeah, knowing that I'm crap at playing football.
fair enough, and that brings an end to this week's podcast. So thank you so much for listening. Feel free to send in any suggestions you've got for Wikipedia pages or themes that you'd like us to do. You can find us on Twitter at Wiki Wanderers and on Instagram at Wikipedia Wanderers, and we will see you next week for the next installment of the GOAT series of Wikipedia Wanderers. Cheers.